Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve.
All right, cool. Yeah, we're in this series of teachings called Facade, and we've just been sort of working through this idea of the difference between perception and reality, and what really is compared to sometimes what we try to pretend is actually going on. And so a couple weeks ago, we talked about real love, and what does that look like? And then last week, we talked about the real me. What if we could actually be real with ourselves, and we could kind of kill the imposter that we sort of put on this game face we put on for the world, pretending like we have it all together? That's very difficult. And so a few weeks ago, when we were sitting talking about how should we conclude the series, Vince and I were talking, he said, I got an idea, man. We should talk about, like, real purpose and real meaning, like meaning of life stuff. Like, we should talk about what really that is. And he was like, oh, and by the way, I won't be here. And I was like, okay, so hold on. So what you're saying is, like, that week we'll talk about, like, some of the deepest issues of humanity, like purpose and meaning of life, like issues that people for generations and hundreds upon thousands of years have been trying to figure out. People way smarter than me, way smarter than you, way smarter than you and me put together, have been wrestling with and trying to figure out and philosophizing about all that. We want to talk about that, like, in an hour, like play a few songs, a couple videos, and teach, and we're going to tackle that one day. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, okay, sounds good. Let's do it. It's Labor Day weekend. That's not like anybody's going to be here anyway. You know what I'm saying? Look around. You know, I'm just kidding. But yeah, so that's what we're talking about. We want to talk about what is real. In this life that we're living, that we're all, the one thing we have in common is we're all, like, living this life. We all got dropped into this life that we're sort of living in. And all of us, at some point or another, if we haven't, we will wrestle with the idea of, like, what am I doing here? Like, how did I even get here? I mean, I know how, but, you know what I mean, like the big how. I'm just going to laugh at all my jokes really loud. I'm just going to, oh, man, I'm funny. Okay, because I got to fill the room with something. So anyway. But I mean, I know how, but how did I get here? Why am I here? Like, what's the point of this? Is there any purpose to this? Is there any real meaning behind this? I mean, these are the big issues. And so that's what we're going to wrestle with. What does it really look like? And so where should we go? But pop culture, of course, because our artists are the ones who really inform us, right? And so I want to go back to, like, the very beginning of modern pop culture. There's a gentleman by the name of Pete Seeger who had a little band. His little outfit was called The Byrds, which is with a Y, not with an I, B-Y-R-D-S. I'm not entirely sure why. If you know, you can feel free to tell me later, of course. Or maybe we can just shout it out. We can just have some fun here. I don't know. But if you know, Byrds, B-Y-R-D-S. And the Byrds, they had this hit single, this smash hit single in the mid-60s. And, the days of the hippie movement was getting kicked off. And 65, they had this smash hit called Turn, Turn, Turn. And maybe you know it. And help me out here. Maybe you can sing it. It's like, to everything, turn, turn, turn. There you go. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. Here it is, a little fun. All right. A time to be born. Yeah, flower in the hair. A time to die. You with me? All right, who's making fun of me? This will be good for, yeah, we'll just have fun. We have the peanut gallery today. But hey, so Pete Seeger, this is what he does. And they have a smash hit from this song. It's all about a time to do this, a time to do that. And the funny thing is, Pete Seeger actually wrote, I think, if you include Turn, 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 maybe 9, but it's like 6 words of that song. Yeah, at the end it says a time for war, a time for peace. And actually draws out, it's like, a time for peace, I swear it's not too late. That's the only part he wrote. That and turn, turn, turn. The entire rest of the lyric, he just ripped. He took straight from the Bible, of all places, in a book called Ecclesiastes, and a guy named Solomon, who wrote this mysterious and strange book called Ecclesiastes. And Pete Seeger just borrowed from it and said, I took it. In fact, he gave 45% of the royalties from the record to the Israeli Committee Against House Demolition. Because he was like, I only wrote like a few words. And that's where he lifted it. And so here it is. It's from the 3rd chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes in the Bible. Here it is. This might look familiar. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant, a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather them. A time to embrace and a time to refrain. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep up and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. And he would add, I swear it's not too late. It's an interesting thing. He just lists this lyric, and it's all about time, and it's all about this purpose under heaven. And it's very intriguing because I think, as I've thought a lot about this over the past few days, it's a funny thing. That's all we have in this life. The thing that we have in life, what life is just, it's just an amount of time. That's what we have. We just have time. And we don't get to decide how much time. We didn't decide when we got here. Most of us hopefully don't decide when we leave, because if you do, that's tragic. There's a word for it. It's called suicide. It's not good. But, I mean, we don't get to decide how much time we have. We just get a certain amount of time, and it's called life. And there's not really a lot we can do with time. In fact, the only thing that we can really do with time, if we really think about it, is spend it. That's it. You just spend your time. Maybe we think there's other things we can do. We have some things we say, but they're not really true if you really break them down. Like, we'll say, like, if I could just buy more time. You know, like if you're facing a deadline, you're like, if I could just buy more time. But the truth is, we kind of know that's all. You can't really buy more time. Time is what it is. It's just a certain amount. That's what you get. You can't buy more. All you can do is spend it. And then we say things like, man, that guy's living on borrowed time. Because maybe that guy's like a big risk taker. You're like, phew, he's living on borrowed time. I mean, come on. Or maybe he's offended somebody and somebody's after him. He's living on borrowed time. Or maybe somebody's old. And they're older than the life expectancy, scientifically. Like, you're only supposed to live to be 73, like if you're a man, and maybe a guy's like 85, and people are like, "Ooh, he's living on borrowed time." Not sure how that works, but seriously, don't borrow mine. You know what I mean? Like, don't be trying to stretch this thing to 85 years at the expense of me getting 61, because I need all the time I can get to figure out life. Because if we're honest, life is a mystery. I mean, Madonna even says so. So you know it's got to be... I don't know where that came from, honestly. And sometimes I say things, I'm like, why did I say that? You know, but I'm quoting Madonna. Okay, so anyway, so life, but it is. It's cryptic, it's mysterious. It's like, what are we doing here? How did we get here? And so for a lot of us, it's like, how do you explain this? I mean, how do you explain this phenomenon called life and this time that we get, and how do we spend it, and what do we do? And so this week, I sat down with Jacob, one of our interns, and I said, hey, man, let's try to find, like, the perfect movie clip that would describe life, that people would just watch a clip and they go, yep, that's what life's like to me. And I think for most people, I think Jacob found it, actually, we talked about it. I think he found the perfect movie clip that people would say, that's my life right there. You want to see it? All right, here it is. Go. There you go. Have a good week. That's it. That's life right there, isn't it? I mean, because if you think about it, and you're like, where are you going with this, Robert? Here's where I'm going. Look, life is kind of like the movie that you arrived at in the middle. Like something really, there seems to be like some big story that's going on, but you have no idea what it is. And I'm banking on no one's seen that movie. But life is like that. It's like this big story. You realize there's some big story going on, and I just sort of seem to drop right in the middle of it, and I'm not sure what's going on. But it seems like maybe something bad has either happened or it's about to happen, and everybody seems a little paranoid. And they better defend themselves. So I better put deflector shields up, man. Something could potentially happen. You see my point? And this is what life is like for most. We just sort of drop in here, and we're like, oh, what happened? I mean, how did I get in the story? And then suddenly we start growing up, and we look around, and we go, where did all this come from? And what's the point of all this? And what am I doing? And everybody's like, something seemed off, and yet something, it's just mysterious. And it doesn't take us long to figure out in life that it seems like there should be more. Like we're expecting more than what we actually think we're getting. I mean, this doesn't take long for us to figure out in our lives. I mean, my 3-year-old daughter, well, she's now 12, but when she was 3, and it was Easter, and she had her Easter basket, and we gave her Easter basket chock full of candy and all that, and a big old Easter bunny, you know what I'm talking about, the big chocolate bunny, and she had the box, and she just starts tearing it up, and she looked at that bunny like, man, I'm going to ravage you. this is not going to be pretty. And she went for the ear first, and she just bit into that ear, and everything sort of crumbled because it wasn't one of those solid chocolate bunnies. It was one of those, fooled you, it's just a hollow shell bunnies. And she bit into it, and it crumbled, and she just looked at it like, and she looked at us, and she was like, there's nothing in here, you know? And I think that's how a lot of us feel about life. Like, there's nothing in here. I was expecting so much more. Like, doesn't it feel like there should be more? I feel hollowed out. I feel like there should have been more. I feel like I should have been able to expect more. Like, what is the point of all this? And it's just that kind of mystery. And so, for generations, and like I said, hundreds of years, thousands of years, very smart people, very intellectual people have pulled together and said, what is the point? And so we just go into this realm of like guessing games, where we just sort of start to guess at it, and we go, well, I got a theory, and my theory seems as good as any other theory, so here's my theory, and here's my take, and we just sort of start playing guessing games, which if you're me, that's very unfortunate, because I'm not very good at guessing games. Like, I'm terrible, actually. Like, you know the game Pictionary? You know the whole point when somebody has to draw something, and most people aren't very good artists in 60 seconds, I've found it. But anyway, I'm terrible at guessing. I may be the world's worst guesser. When we play, I like to draw because I'm actually better at drawing in 60 seconds than I'm guessing in 60 seconds. I'm a terrible guesser. And here's the thing, I'm terrible at the game, but I'm very competitive, which is like a Molotov cocktail. That's bad. Because you know what happens when you get bad at a game plus very competitive equals poor sport. Yeah, that's me. You know, I'm like the one, I'm bad at it, but I want to win. You know, and so that's a bad combination. And so, like, when we play Pictionary, like, I just want to draw, but sometimes some other people draw, and, you know, this is how it goes for me. This is how it normally goes. Okay, all right, seriously, the time's running out. Draw something. Come on! Give me some. Okay, there you go. Okay, a smell. It's like it's like a smell, like somebody smells something, smell. Oh, an arrow, like go. Go after the smell! Like the card really says, go after the smell. And I think I've got it. It's go after the smell, and I keep yelling it. Like, if I keep yelling it, they'll just say, yes, Rob, you've got it. But they don't, and I keep yelling, go after the smell. And finally somebody else says, oh, follow your nose. Oh, yay! And they win. And I go, what? Oh, man, you only got it because I said go after the smell. And then they're like, what? Like, you think because you said that, then I got it? And then that's kind of how a lot of us feel about life. Like, sometimes I, even honestly, if I can be really honest, if I can be real, I feel that way about life. I'm like, I feel like sometimes, like, man, I do things that I'm helping other people understand, and sometimes I don't even understand. It's like they're getting it right, and I'm not getting it right, and what's going on? This is life. And it's difficult. And so it's like sometimes we just play these guessing games, and then it doesn't take us long before we start to settle into this idea that, hey, look, maybe there is no point. Maybe there is no point in life. Maybe the only point of life is just to get what I can get and get a lot of it. And just, we sort of develop this bumper sticker mentality of like, whoever dies with the most toys wins. Wins what? Like, what do you win? I mean, it doesn't take long to realize that when people die, they leave, and none of their stuff goes with them. So what do you win? What do you win? I mean, we figure out that maybe if I just get a lot of stuff that makes me feel good, and it doesn't take us long to fall into this. Like, I remember the same, you know, very young age, 5 years old probably, I remember the first time I got to pay for my own ice cream from the ice cream man. That's a big deal. Seriously, like, the first time you feel like a man, all of a sudden you're like, you got a dollar, and you're like, yeah, I'll have a cherry bomb. Go ahead. There's a dollar, sir. There you go, I got change coming to me. Because back then, ice cream was like 25 cents, you know. So I give him a dollar. And the ice cream man is standing there, and all of a sudden he pulls out, and he's got this belt on. And he's got this, like, little metal chasm piece attached to his belt with chambers. And I give him a dollar, and he owes me change. And this is what he does. He goes, there you go, kid. And I'm like, oh! His belt makes money, you know. I was like, he just made money with his belt. And so I run in my house, and I'm like, Mom, I know what I want for Christmas. I want an ice cream man belt. And she's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, his belt makes money. You just hit buttons, and it just makes money. And she's like, oh, silly boy. And she explains to me that you have to have money to put money into the belt. And then I was like, well, that sucks. That kind of ruins that theory. I was like, I want a belt that makes money because I want stuff. And I want more stuff. And isn't that kind of the point of life? I just get my own. You get yours, I'll get mine. Whoever dies with the most toys wins. I don't know what you win, but I mean, it's just, and it's like we fall into this despair. It's just like, I can never get enough. Because there's this mystery to us, like, there's got to be more to this, so maybe if I just get more stuff, it'll help me feel better about the point of all this, and I don't really know what the point is, but maybe it'll make me feel better, and so we just descend and descend into this despair. And the guy, interestingly enough, that Pete Seeger quoted in his hit smash hit for the birds, Solomon, the king of Israel, this was his life. In fact, he was like the, in history's recording, I think the first ever existentialist. You know, existentialism is this idea, it's this philosophical idea that is born of the idea that, hey, there is no purpose to any of this. There is no meaning. So just do what you want. You're a free will agent. Just go do whatever you want. Get whatever you want. Do whatever makes you happy. And that's good. It's a good thing. And so Solomon is like the world's first ever, which is interesting because he's king of Israel, which is like God's chosen people. But he develops, and he's the king. Listen, look at this. In the heyday of Israel. Now understand this. Israel didn't have a lot of heyday. The plight of the Jews has not always been very good. But for one time in history, man, there was like King David who was a great leader, and he had sons, and one of them was Solomon, and Solomon took over the kingship, and the temple was built, and they were just thriving. And so this king decides there's no point to life. He would write 36 times in the book of Ecclesiastes, he'll write, it's meaningless. Everything is meaningless. There's no meaning. Everything's vanity. There's no point. So I've just decided that I'm just going to go do what I want to do, and I'm going to get it. And he records the whole thing. And this book is a very troubling book of the Bible for a lot of religious people. Because religious people are not very comfortable with it. They're like, oh my gosh. I mean, he's just got there living like wild woman, sex, drugs, rock and roll kind of life, and he's writing about it. This is not good. And they're uncomfortable with the whole aspect of the existential despair that he's describing. So a lot of Jews and religious Christians over the years have even wanted to remove it. Just like, let's just pretend like that didn't happen. It's fascinating. But Solomon, understand, he's a king of a prominent nation at the time. And so when he says jump, people literally say, exactly how high, sir? So when a person decides, I'm going to get whatever I can get out of this life, and they're a king of a very powerful nation, they can pretty much get whatever they want. And so he literally sets up court, and he's got court jesters, he's got comedians, he's got Vegas-style shows going on just to please him. He's got harems of women, hundreds of women just to do whatever he wants with. He's got, you know, wine, women, song. He even sends people up to the top of a mountain called Hermon so that they'll bring down ice to him so he can have cold drinks. But you might be thinking, that's not a big deal, Rob. Ice and drinks is not a new... But this was 3,000 years ago. The guy could have whatever he wanted. And you know what he did? He had whatever he wanted. And he just lived it to complete excess. And he said, it's all meaningless. It doesn't matter. And he just lived and lived and lived. And it's funny because this, you know what often goes along with existentialism is despair. It seems like in the life, in this world, the more people have, the more hollow they actually feel. It turns out that the answer to the mystery of life, the key to the purpose of meaning life, is not found in things. I mean, how many E! True Hollywood stories and VH1's Behind the Music do we have to experience and watch to know? That's not the answer. How many celebrities have to die of drug overdoses because they're just like, and they're just anesthetizing and self-medicating to try to deal with this life? How many times does that have to happen before we realize that's not working? It's just not working. And it's crazy how it seems like the more you have, the more hollow you can become. I mean, existentialism as a philosophy was born in Paris. That's where it germinated, in Paris, in a city that had more, that was thriving. And yet people were just fraught with despair and thought, what's the point? I might as well get mine and get mine. And so they think that somehow it's going to feed them, and it doesn't. And Solomon's plight is this. He keeps feeding it. Like it's going to do something. He keeps trying more and more stuff. I'll try it all. I tried this to see if it was there, and it was nothing. It was meaningless. So I tried this to see if something was there, and it was meaningless. I tried this to see if something was there, and it was meaningless. And for chapter after chapter, he whinges on about how I could find no satisfaction in any of it. I tried it all, and there was nothing. There was no point. There was no purpose. It was all meaningless. It's interesting, in the 12th chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon sort of suddenly makes a turn. And it's almost as if he regrets going on and for chapter after chapter and complaining about his plight. And suddenly and very sternly he gives these words that are just sort of will smack you at first. And these are the words right here. They're this: remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Solomon says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Some of us like hear that and say, well, I'm not so young anymore. I mean, that's how I would. But here's the thing. I think the point that Solomon's driving home is remember your Creator early and often. And today you are younger than you will be tomorrow. And tomorrow you'll be younger than you will be next week. And next week you'll be younger than you will be next month. And next month you'll be younger than you will be next year. And the time will just keep going. And you'll spend more and more time and you'll find nothing unless one thing, you remember your Creator. And it's as if he says suddenly, because that's the whole point. The point is actually your Creator. You're a creation. And only a creation can only be informed of purpose and meaning by its Creator. And the truth is, life is significant. The truth is, all those yearnings that are in us that say there's got to be more, there is more. And God has a purpose. Your Creator has a purpose. And when you can get to know your Creator, you realize, oh my gosh, not only is there something, not only is there a point and meaning, but I'm invited into this great, big, like, dynamic kingdom, and I can actually make a difference in this life. It's quite incredible. And you see, Solomon's words are very wise, by the way, because you think about if you don't go back to your Creator, then you'll never find a point. You'll never find meaning. You'll constantly be in quest of it. In fact, Bertrand Russell, who's a famed atheist one, you says this: unless you assume a God, the question of life's point is meaningless. I mean, you'll never find anything. The Apostle Paul, one of the first Christians, says this. These are great words, and he's speaking of Jesus. He says, for everything, absolutely everything, above and below, invisible and visible, everything got started in him and finds its purpose in him. Him being Jesus, God, the God who came to give us purpose and meaning, and to say, this is the point. A life in search of this meaning apart from God is a life of despair. And all these things that we'll run to try to find peace and try to find something to plug into that quest for meaning and purpose will only do the exact opposite. It will just further lead us down a spiral of despair. See, purpose was God and God's alone. Actually, our quest for it, it was something that God never intended for us to have. He just intended that we would know him. And by knowing him, we would understand meaning. Author Philip Yancey, he puts this also brilliantly. He says this: by carrying a burden that we were never intended to carry, we turn nudity into pornography. We turn wine into alcoholism. Food into gluttony, and human diversity into prejudice and racism. He says, despair descends as we abuse God's good gifts to where they seem no longer gifts and they no longer seem good. Listen, think about it. Think of all the things in our lives that we run to thinking, this will make me feel better, this will make me feel better. Because I believe this, all things are created good. But they can't do for us what we need them to do. They won't ever give us point, purpose, meaning, anything, because that's in God alone. And believe me, God gave us all these beautiful things. All things are good. Listen, let me tell you real quick. I've passed 11 kidney stones in my life. That's no joke. 11. It's a fraternity that you want no part of. But I will tell you this. After passing 11 kidney stones, I have a philosophy. Drugs are good. Man, they are good. I mean, in the right context, drugs are good. But here's the thing that we do in our lives. We take good things and we abuse them, trying to get them to do things that they were never intended to do. And then those things, and here's the thing. If you abuse any good thing in this world, it will eventually abuse you back. So when you abuse drugs just to self-medicate and exercise, it will abuse you back. When you take wine and alcohol and you abuse it, it will abuse you back. There are story after story that could be told. There are people in this room that could tell you stories that will abuse you back. You take food and you stuff yourself with it and you're never satisfied, and it will abuse you back. You take the human form and its beauty, you abuse it, and it will eventually abuse you back. We take these beautiful things and we try to put them into voids and holes that they were never intended to fill. They were just things here for pleasure, and they're never going to define our meaning. They're just not going to. And the funny thing that we do is we keep going back to the same things even though they've never worked for us. As if we do them one more time, then that's the time that it will give us some sense of satisfaction, some sense of purpose, some sense of meaning. This one will be the one. And it's kind of funny because I don't know about you, but I grew up watching Peanuts. You know what I'm talking about, Charlie Brown? Anybody know what I'm talking about? Yeah, all right. So Charlie Brown, he had this quest, he had this goal in his life. All Charlie Brown wanted to do was kick one field goal. Just one field goal. That's not even a big dream, seriously, people. Just one field goal, it doesn't even seem like that hard. All you gotta do is find one person on the whole ball, and that's where Lucy comes in. Oh, Lucy. She's like the devil. Because you know what Lucy does all the time? She's always like, Charlie, I'll hold the ball for you. And then the last second when he's going to kick, she always yanks the ball out, and he goes flying through the air, and he lands on his back, and it's like, oh. And so then they'll show an episode, like, whatever, and he'll just be out there with his football, and Lucy will come, and she'll go, oh, Charlie, I'll hold the ball for you. And I'm watching, and I'm like, no! No, Charlie! Don't do this thing, man. Don't fall for it, man. It's no good. She's no good. She's never been any good. She's always duping you. She's going to dupe you again. Don't do it. And she'll go, no, I promise this time I'll hold it down. Charlie, he's such a nice guy. He's so naive. And he's like, okay. And you're like, Charlie, no. And he goes up to run it. And you're hoping kind of like, please, Lucy, don't be that cruel. Nobody's that cruel. Just hold it one time. So Charlie can kick the ball one time. And he goes, and sure enough, she pulls it out. And he goes flying. And you're like, oh, Charlie. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. But you know what's funny for me? I'll speak for myself here. Maybe you can see this in you. It's funny how I can notice that sort of thing in other people a lot better than I can notice it myself. Like, I can totally always tell people, that's no good for you. Can't you see the pattern in your life and all that? But then, like, when people say the same to me, I'm like, no. You don't know. It's none of your business. Back off. You know what I mean? We're good at that, right? We're good at, like, noticing everybody else is like, here's your issue. I'll tell you what's wrong. But then when someone turns back and says, hey, I got it. I got this. And we live behind this facade that we have it. That we can figure all this out on our own. And the truth is we can't. And it's funny how we go to the same things and we abuse the same things trying to figure out life. And they just start abusing us back. And it's like we're thirsty and we can't figure out why, but it's like we keep licking salt. It's like we're like, oh my gosh, I'm so thirsty. I'm thirsty. And it's like, we just keep looking salt. And we get thirstier and thirstier, and we find nothing is there for us. And it's funny because Jesus one time was sitting with his disciples, and he talked a lot about the issue of, like, all the things we worry about and all the things that we're trying to figure out and all the things that we're trying to put in the right spots and the right places so that we can give life some sort of meaning and purpose and that we can understand it so that we feel better. And he had some words to say, and they sounded like this. He said of one time, he said, consider the ravens. I mean, consider the birds of the air, birds of the eye, I think, by the way. Remember the Y and the, yeah. So consider the ravens, he says. They just fly. They don't toil or spin, or they just do their thing, and yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable are you than birds? And he says this, he says, consider the lilies of the field. They neither labor nor toil nor spin. And he says this interesting, he says, yet even Solomon, same Solomon, in all his splendor, with all his excess, was not dressed up nearly as beautifully as one of these. How much more valuable are you than that? And he says, don't worry so much about your life. Seek God first, and other things will be added. They just sort of get remedied. Like, seek God first. If you think about it, I mean, think about it as an analogy. Animals just don't worry about stuff like that. They just don't. We're the only being that gets so caught up in it all. You know, like, animals, here's animals. They eat, sleep, go to the bathroom. I don't really know the polite way to say it. Go to the bathroom. And they reproduce. So all the men are like, eat, sleep, go to the bathroom, reproduce. That's what I'm talking about. And then the ladies are like, that's why men are pigs. Am I right, ladies? That's right. No, I'm just kidding. It's a little funny. But we are. We're the only beings. We get so caught up in all this. And we're like, what's the point of all this? And Jesus says, just relax. Rest. Here's the good news. Everything got started in him and finds its purpose in him. Jesus is like, don't worry about it. God's been thinking about you a lot longer than you've been thinking about him. Did you get that? God's been thinking about you a lot longer than you've been thinking about him. God's had all this under control a lot longer than you've been here. But we wrestle with it all. What is the point? You know, what is all this? And he says, relax. Seek first me, and then all those things will start to line up. They'll all make sense. But apart from me, it won't happen. Solomon comes to a very quick and swift conclusion at the end of the 12th chapter. It's just like suddenly he just hammers it, and here it is. He says this, now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. I've done it all. I've tried to find meaning everywhere. I've done this. I tried to find meaning. It didn't work. I've done this. But here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. There will be no facades to hide behind. God will pull it all into light. Fear God and keep his commandment. It's a little expression that literally means like love and trust and be devoted to God. And the truth is, the thing that's so engaging to me is that Solomon is like crying out. He's, you know what he's saying? It's like a wake-up call that Solomon's trying to give humanity. He's saying, wake up. Stop anesthetizing yourselves and wake up and realize this, that it all started with God, it's all about God now, and it's all going to be about God. It's God where you find life, your meaning. It's where you find purpose. That is everything right there. Wake up. Paul, that same apostle, one of the first Christians, will say to the church in Ephesians, in the book of the Bible called Ephesians, he'll say, wake up, O sleeper. Rise up from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. And it's like Solomon's trying to give humanity a wake-up call. And here's the thing to me that I want to say. I'm glad we've learned so much since the days of Solomon. Solomon wrote this book 3,000 years ago, and it's as relevant as if he wrote it last week. And I would say the same thing that Solomon says. It's time. Wake up. Most of us spend our time just wasting our time doing things over and over again, exhausted, spent, wondering why we can't get any joy in life. And there's only one thing that can wake us up, and that's God alone. And I'm going to ask the band to come back up, and we're going to do another tune. Wake up, O sleeper. Let me pray for us. God, I just, this morning, I thank you for you. And I thank you that you've given us this life, which, whether we realize it or not, is really a gift to us so that we could actually know you. And God, I pray that this morning before we leave this place that we'll ask ourselves some difficult questions and be honest. Most of our lives, God, are chock full of warning signs and just alarms going off that say something's not right here. And God, may we let you wake us up, and may we never feel more alive than we do in these moments. And I pray it all in the name of Jesus. Amen.